Bobby's 8 years old, and he's been diagnosed as having ADHD.
From the moment he first moved, he has not stopped.
He can cry very easily at a homework problem, or he can scream at his brothers.
It breaks my heart to see this handsome, intelligent, lovable, wonderful, funny child come home every day and say, "This is the only place I feel safe."
This is Focus on the Family, and today we're going to talk about ADHD, or Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout, hoping that you'll stay with us for the next 30 minutes as we return to a very important subject. Perhaps you're a parent and your child has already been diagnosed as having ADHD and you're just starting to get things under control. Or you're a parent who is at your wit's end. You don't know why your child can't stay concentrated in school, why he or she, and it's often a he, is doing so poorly, why they seem to be wound about three times as tight as anyone else who's their same age. This is part two of a recorded discussion with a panel of guests who have direct experience with ADD or ADHD. They include Carol Wilkerson, Linda Graham, and Sandra Thomas, all three who are mothers of ADD children, and Dr. Grant Martin and Dr. Patrick McCaffrey. Dr. Martin is a clinical psychologist and author of an excellent resource on ADHD called The Hyperactive Child. And then Dr. McCaffrey has been a pediatrician for nearly 30 years. He's the former chief of staff at a major hospital here in Colorado Springs and is a medical expert on this subject. As a matter of fact, Dr. Dobson directed his first question, or at least the question that we're going to turn to on this second broadcast, first to Dr. McCaffrey.
Pat, talk about the medical aspects of this now. What is going on chemically and neurologically that causes a youngster to have this problem?
Well, they come, lest we left you with the impression that these people are small tornadoes, they aren't. There are children who are very quiet who have this disorder as well. So that you're not going to pick out a good number of these children just by their speed of light activity.
Do you agree with the figure I gave before of 35-40% are hyperactive?
That's correct. Yeah. But we shouldn't focus all of our attention on those.
Right.
While it is true that the early history of hyperactivity focused on some sort of insult to your nervous system, we're still not quite sure what it is. There's a lot of research that goes on. Very intensive and expensive research, and we're not sure whether this is going to bear some fruit. We've had to watch these children for 28 or 30 years, but we have discovered that if you give them drugs, and now we have to approach this very carefully because lest we believe that drugs are the answer to these children, many of them benefit by medical therapy. The therapies that we give them might astound most people who don't know much about them, because the therapy that is given to these children is actually stimulant drugs. Yeah. And you'd say, gosh, why would you give a stimulant drug to a person who's already past the speed of light? But as a matter of fact, these drugs, which are stimulants and some alternative drugs which are helpful in other disorders, help these children focus on the task that is in front of them. But what these drugs do in experimental sorts of things is increase blood supply, induce the nervous system to concentrate on a subject. And those are the ones that we are approaching here very carefully in treating these children.
If you had to take a guess as to what's going on in the brain of an ADHD child or an ADD child, what would you say? I mean,
well,
when I was in school, it was minimal brain dysfunction, as you said, Grant. I mean, what I was taught was that in the normal birth process, there is an insult, an injury to the brain that is not measurable. You can't see it except at autopsy, but it's there and it has an influence. Now there's more talk of a chemical influence. Where do you come down on it?
Well, I think that if you look at what's going inside the brain, you just have to look at them sitting in front of you. The reason these people are impulsive, and we say people because not all of them are children now, is that they can't perceive and focus on one thing. They are processing all of the things to which they're bombarded with, which is a person over here and a person over there and a visual something and a stoplight and maybe a noise. And they are responding to all of these things all at once. And you can see that if you watch them very carefully.
My layman's brain hears you saying that instead of this child being, this is not going to be a good word, but retarded, they're actually accelerated in certain areas of their physical development.
And they take in everything, but can't process one thing.
And what you're trying to do with these drugs, in some cases, is accelerate the other aspects of who they are to come up to those areas of their life that are moving at such a rapid pace.
That's correct. You allow them to process all of these things so that they respond in a way which they can understand and we can understand.
Mm-hmm. Mike, one way that I have used as a metaphor to try to describe this to parents is kind of like a ferry boat. We have lots of ferry boats in Washington. That if you look at the brain and you've got these neurotransmitters, it's kind of like little ferry boats that are running back and forth between the neurons. And in order to pay attention and concentrate, they need to have adequate gasoline supply. They need to have their engines fired up. That helps the message get from one side to the other. Now, this is oversimplified a bit, but it's at least a start. So what we do by giving stimulant medication is we fill up their gas tank in that little ferry boat. That the stimulant helps the brain produce something called dopamine, and that's what the neurotransmitter kind of uses to propel itself back and forth between the two sides of the brain or the inside part of the brain. And so, you know, we think about we got to go to the gas station and put gas in our car to make it run. You know, gas is something fiery and energetic, and that's kind of what happens with these kids.
All right, let's then deal with that with the three mothers who've been there in terms of giving drugs. Explain where you came down on that.
I think that is a wonderful question. I think that's one that certainly has had more controversy in the last few years than any topic I can think of, particularly in education. But as a mom, thinking back, medication for us, I can remember when my son Noah was in first grade, and at that point in time we were trying to get him to be able to go to the store with us and to do many things. And as a family, it just seemed like everything you did kind of fell apart into pieces with him there. And it broke our heart because we loved him very much. We wanted to include him. We wanted to do things as a family. But we just didn't have any real big successes. Even going to church was a big ordeal for us because he just couldn't handle it.
And he couldn't sit there.
He couldn't sit there. He couldn't get ready without stress. He just couldn't handle that hour and a half or 2 hours of having to be in that kind of structure on Sunday morning. So it just felt like for a long time that there was just nothing we could do and be successful at as a family, even though we were trying very, very many things. Also, I think medication, too, has probably gotten in the way of us moving ahead with these kids because we're in such an anti-drug society these days and that kind of thing, that we never quite get beyond that issue in so many support groups and in so many discussions and so much in-services that we've done for teachers. That area is argued over and over and over again, and we never get onto, but what can we do?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
There's other things. There's so much more that plays a part in this child's therapy and interventional strategies and that kind of thing.
Did you give drugs to your son? What did he take, Ritalin?
In first grade, he took Ritalin. He also has a lot of mood swings with his ADD. And so for us, we'd give him Ritalin for school, and he was wonderful at school. And he still is. His behavior is really quite good. He's respectful. He's the neatest kid in the world. He'd walk in my front door, and you'd think that everything was falling apart because he would rage, he'd fall apart. It was a safe environment. He walked in that door and he had to let loose.
He controlled it at school.
Right. These ADHD kids can control frequently in one environment and not another. And that's hard for people to understand. I know with my son now, I kind of thank God when he does let it come out at home simply because I know that he feels that's a safe place to let those kinds of reactions
occur. That's a wonderful
occur.
Attitude toward it. Sandra, what did you do regarding drugs?
Well, I guess I would suggest a couple of things. One is medication is probably one of the hardest decisions that a parent has to make. And I would suggest that I do think in terms of medication rather than drugging your child, because as you point out, you know, the notion of drugs in society has a very negative connotation, and certainly it should. But the medication to help with the medical component certainly is very advantageous for a lot of children. For some, it won't work.
So
for our child, it hasn't
him.
Worked. We've tried medication.
Did it work?
It has not been effective. But we're still trying different ones, and we're on to a new one now that hopefully has some promise. I guess the other point I really feel very clear about making is that medication is not the only intervention you would use. It is, and even the medication companies will tell you that it's in conjunction with other therapies. So it's one part, an integral part for some children, but only one part of the total treatment plan.
Carol, did you medicate?
Yes, we did. We put Matt on Ritalin when he was in the first grade, and he's still on Ritalin just during the school year.
He's 13 now?
He's 13, yeah. He's in the seventh grade. Mm-hmm. And he will tell us that he needs to take his Ritalin, and we have made it his responsibility. We don't, every morning, take your medicine. He knows he has to take his medicine, and he'll tell us if he didn't take his medication in the morning, oh, I didn't take my Ritalin this morning.
And
well,
you'll
how
know
was your
as
day?
Well when he doesn't. Yeah.
Well, pretty much. But you know,
one of you tried to take your child off medication? Was it you, Linda?
This was a really a good year for me with the ADHD difficulties we were dealing with Noah, simply because this fall we went back to the doctor. Things weren't going so well at school again. That fine-tuning we needed to do with the medication. And we decided to gradually take him off the antidepressant medication that he was on just to kind of give him that vacation free so we knew what we had. Well, it was really a startling realization for both my husband and I, simply because those were the most stressful couple of weeks I've ever lived through in my life. I think we spent the majority of our time in prayer. I feel like in the last several years that he has been diagnosed that maybe I wasn't quite to the point where I had truly been convicted that this was what God wanted me to do with my son. And I felt like this fall was
you found out.
Where I really got convicted.
How did he behave? What was so striking?
I guess what was so striking to me were the rages and the crying and the just depression and sadness. And he would walk in from school, walk in the door, and immediately it would all start happening. The anger, the arguing, the fighting, to some extent the aggression. And it was just really hard to say, well, this is, the child right now without the medication. And we all sat down, we prayed about it a number of times, and I really felt through that process we had to go through acceptance again of the ADHD and acceptance of the fact that, these medications probably were something we were going to have to continue.
Medication used in attention deficit is not a mind-altering drug. Often the parents will ask me that, and they'll equate it to marijuana or LSD or something. Mm-hmm. And if we look at it, it's replacing a chemical that is missing. A person who has diabetes, their pancreas isn't working, they're not producing insulin. So they take insulin to replace what's not there. And people don't usually view that as some kind of a spiritual inadequacy. And I think we can view it that way with ADD children.
The bottom line is that medication has a role to play, but it is not the answer. It is not the only answer, certainly. Mm-hmm. And it is not a permanent answer. You have to continue to evaluate that and maybe change medication, fish for what's right.
That's
but
right.
There are many other approaches. Let's turn a corner, and I want to talk directly to the mother and father out there who have a younger child who's going through this and are blaming themselves and are feeling like bad parents and have been told that by the mother-in-law or by the church people. Talk to them. Is there anything you can say to encourage those people?
Don't feel bad. it's easy to say, but we've all been through it. And I think that if you don't know what you're dealing with, whether it's, a diabetic child or a child who has a wide variety of other disabilities, if you don't know what you're dealing with, of course you're going to blame yourself. That's a natural thing. I think that as a parent, you say, what can I do to make it better? But I think the more we understand that this is a medical diagnosis, this is a medical problem that has ramifications behaviorally, educationally, and the family, if they understand that they're not alone, and that's our kind of our motto, is it's nice to know you're not alone. And it's not only nice, it can be critical, because you do feel like you will do anything to make it work for this child.
Well, one of the myths, it is not caused by poor parenting. It is a, by and large, a genetic inherited condition, something that most ADD children are born with. Now, parenting can exaggerate or intensify the problem, but it does not cause a child to be this disruptive. And I've had parents come in, we do the evaluation, meet with the rest of the multidisciplinary team, and after it comes down and we tell them what, yes, it looks like your child is an attention deficit child, they break into tears.
With relief.
Oh, relief.
Thank you, doctor.
You betcha.
You know, we knew something was wrong, and we just, you know, we got to the point we hated our child, and then we felt guilty that we felt that way. And it's just such relief to know that there is something there that we can now put a name on it. I know we've got a lifetime of managing this thing. There's not a cure, you've told us, but there's something we can do, and it's not our fault.
Mm-hmm. You can encourage them, I think, to discuss this with their physician if they have one. And hopefully your physician would be astute enough, sensitive enough, if the parent would bring it up. Too often, I think, parents hide these sorts of things, and physicians, being busy, may take note but not ask. And I guess this is a appeal to physicians. If you think that there's something wrong, don't hesitate to broach this subject. And many times this problem will come up and say, are you having a few discipline problems? Well, yeah, doctor, you know, and as a matter of fact, we discipline him time after time after time, and it doesn't seem to make sense, and then the mother will break into tears. Everybody's busy these days, but it doesn't take very long to elicit this kind of response from parents if you're willing to take the time.
That's right. The other thing, I think that you would agree, both Lynn and Carol, about labels. You know, we've gotten criticized because we're going to put a label on this child. We don't think of it as a label. We think of it as a diagnosis, which mm-hmm. drives treatment. I don't consider my child an ADHD child. I consider my child a great kid who happens to have ADHD, as we would if he would have any other disability. And what we do for that child is going to be different than for a child who has a different problem.
Sandra, role play with me, will you?
Sure.
This is my first time coming to your organization. And I'm a mother, and I've got this three-year-old child, and I tell you, this youngster drives me crazy. I cannot stand to be around him. I mean, he tears up the whole family. He harasses the other kids in the family. He breaks their toys. The kids in the neighborhood don't like him, and I don't like him either. And I think I'm losing my mind. What do you say to me?
I put my arm around her, and we cry. It's a start. Because
you heard that story?
Day after day after day. And in my own support groups, we hear that story. We have a newcomers group, and that's exactly the story we hear. What we do is we try and reach out to them in a sensitive fashion to say, I've been there, and I still am there at times. I still cry. I still feel very frustrated. And it is not easy. And I understand a lot now that I didn't know then. So I think the first point is sensitivity. The second point is, we're here to help you. You are not the only parent, although it certainly feels like that. Huh. And when they hear the other stories of other parents in the support group time that we have and the lectures that we have come to educate us, they begin to understand that, oh, there are different things I'll have to do for this child. There's a different way I'll have to structure my family than other parents don't have to do, but I better do if I'm going to help him.
Okay, Linda, role play with me.
Okay.
I'm a father, and I come to a parent-teacher conference. Mm-hmm. You're the teacher of my child. And I say, okay, I know, he's flunking everything. He's getting terrible grades. His papers are a mess. His desk is a mess. I can't make him do homework. He will not do it. He won't do it. What in the world do I do?
That's a question I get often, too, and I smile, because I think that as parents, by the time we get to that point, and they're coming in and asking me that, they're so overwhelmed. These kids are not only having academic problems, but they're having really significant social problems. They have some physical problems with fine motor and oftentimes gross motor concerns. They just have areas everywhere that are needing some attention. And they come in and they're so overwhelmed. And as a teacher, sometimes it's real easy to get overwhelmed as well, because there's so many areas academically and everywhere in everything that he does at school that child needs some help. that I think one thing I say to the parents is that we need to work together. We need to try to set some goals now, but those goals we need to limit. Because if we start setting, you know, 40 goals, we're not going to get anywhere. But let's together start sorting through this and try to prioritize and try to set one goal together that we can work on and chart our progress together and do this as a team effort.
Can you ever hear yourself saying to a parent, there are a number of things we need to work on, there are a number of problems. Let's don't get too excited about the academics for right now.
Oh, yes.
You know, he'll learn, he's bright, it'll come. I'm not worried about him failing tests right now.
I smile because I must say that at least five times a day with my son. I think the number one concern I have for him right now is his self-esteem. You know, if he was a child who could go to school and sit still and pay attention and be on task and complete his work, he wouldn't be considered a, quote, bad child. But these ADHD children, that's the things they can't do. Those are the things we measure good behavior with. And so, quite honestly, I worry so much more about his self-esteem simply because the teacher is going to have a rough time finding the positive areas that she needs to reinforce.
Grant, a youngster can catch up academically, but those assaults to his self-concept stay with him for life if you're not careful, don't
they? That's true. Jim, I wonder if I could share a little essay that a client wrote that addresses that very thing.
All right.
It just kind of breaks your heart, so I hope I can make it through.
This is out of your book, The Hyperactive Child.
And this boy was an attention deficit disorder, but his parents would not acknowledge the problem. The school was concerned. They tried everything they could to get the parents to do something, and they said, our boy doesn't have a problem. You just teach him, and we won't do anything about it. Well, he'd gotten into trouble, and so the teacher had him write a little essay about following the rules at school and why was that important. And here's what that little fellow said.
How old was he?
He was fourth grade.
Okay.
It's good to follow the rules because if you don't, you could get hurt, die, break a bone, or have a bad injury. I should follow the rules, too. I try to, but it's hard for me because I'm so hyper. If you don't follow the rules, you will get a lot of referrals. Too many referrals means suspension from school. If you don't follow the rules, you'll end up like me, a low-down scumbucket. I'm a very bad kid in school. I like school. The only problem is I always have trouble. I'll do anything if you don't tell my mom about this. Also, if you don't follow the rules, you'll never grow up right, and nobody will like you. You might become a robber and steal jewelry. You'll be rich, but it was stupid of you to steal in the first place. If you never learn anything, if you never follow the rules. I barely ever follow the rules. I never learn anything. If you don't follow the rules, when you grow up, you might turn out like a bum. And you'll never, ever be smart unless you go back to school and start from the third grade. I get bad grades because I don't follow the rules that much. Always follow the rules, and you'll never be a bad person.
Already in the fourth grade, he is convinced that he's a failure at life. Yeah. He'll never accomplish anything. In fact, he very well might go into crime. That's what you get from it, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. And I would like to comment on that. With our son Matt, or with any of these kids, these failures are daily. I mean, they just, it's constant barrage of failures. It's not just the F that they might get at school. It's not, we're not talking about that failure, although with us that has definitely been a problem at times. But the kids fail with everything. They fail because they forget to brush their teeth. They fail because they forget to do a little job you told them. They fail because they say something to their friend that, of course, the friend doesn't like, and then their friend is angry at them. It's day after day. It's a daily thing. And self-esteem
and
with these kids,
it hurts you just as much as it hurts.
It hurts. And I know with our son, I feel that just helping him understand the disorder has been really an asset to him. So now he doesn't know. Dave and I went through this a long time ago. Well, now we understand what is going on with Matt. It helps. But then all of a sudden one day we realized Matt doesn't understand what's going on. He needs to know that he's got this supposed chemical imbalance or genetic whatever it is. And we felt that it was very important for his self-esteem just to be able to acknowledge that. Now, we don't let him use it as an excuse. Like, yeah. we don't allow him to say, well, I can't do that because, oh, I've got ADD. No, he doesn't do that. But it helps him understand a little bit what's going on with his life.
Well, I hope you're drawing some encouragement from this conversation as we finish up a second day now dealing with the topic of attention deficit disorder. We again appreciate our four guests who joined us in the studio. We've recorded this material and we'll play a third day for you when Focus on the Family returns. I hope you'll also share the fact that we're on the air and are dealing with this matter with your friends, because so many people are struggling with children who have ADD or ADHD. This program is provided by Focus on the Family. Your host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. Our producer for the series is Tim Doyle. Audio engineering and production are being handled by Jim Adam and John Dorick. Bobby Valentine is our executive producer, and I'm Mike Trout, looking forward to having you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.